Good morning. The meeting of the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy is being recorded. It's 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday, March 25, 2025. Dr. Bastillo, after you call the meeting to order, we'll do a roll call of the board members and staff and proceed with the reading of the board's mission statement.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call the March 25th, 2025 Arizona Board of Physical Therapy meeting to order.
Thank you. Dr. Bastillo.
Here.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Dr. Hike.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Barton.
Here.
Dr. King. Let the record show Dr. King is absent. Ms. Crowley.
Here.
Ms. Bryant.
Here.
Ms. Richardson.
Present.
Dr. Sinish.
Here.
And my name is Judy Chepius, and we are joined by Assistant Attorney General, Mr. Mark Harris. At this point, I do believe that Dr. Bastillo said Mr. Leone is going to be reading the mission statement.
Yes.
If you will, please.
All right. The mission of the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy is to protect the public from the incompetent, unprofessional, and unlawful practice of physical therapy. The Arizona Physical Therapy Practice Act establishes the standards for the practice of physical therapy, continuing competence, and testing, and defines the scope and limitations of practice. The board licenses qualified applicants as physical therapists and physical therapist assistants and receives, investigates, and adjudicates complaints against licensees.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
So the first item on the agenda is to approve the minutes for the February 25th regular session. Any changes?
I move to approve the board minutes for February
25th,
2025. Any discussion? Are you ready for the vote?
I think we're ready.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda consisting of the regular session meeting minutes from the February 25th, 2025 board meeting. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hyde?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, we'll move on to applications for licensure. Review consideration and possible action on physical therapist applicant requesting ADA accommodations. Samantha Turgeon, is Ms. Turgeon on the call?
Yes.
Great. Are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Absolutely.
I guess my biggest question is, why do you feel you need a whiteboard? We've not had that request before, and I'm curious.
So as someone with a visual deficit, I have double vision, and so being able to erase previous questions or work instead of staring at it on a blank piece of paper, it has been easier in my test-taking accommodations during PT school.
Thank you.
Ms. Turgeon, I was a little confused from what I saw on the application here. Have you taken the board exam before, or is this the first time?
This will be my first time.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted clarification on that.
Any other questions? We have a motion.
I would move to approve the request for ADA accommodations.
Including time and a half, separate room, and the whiteboard?
Yes.
Second. Any further discussion? I think we're ready, Judy.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve Samantha Turgeon's ADA accommodation requests for additional time of 1.5 hours, separate room, and a whiteboard. Dr. Bastille?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Okay, good luck on the exam.
Thank you.
Okay, and then we have physical therapist applicants who've graduated from a foreign educated program. Number 3, review, consideration, and possible action regarding approving supervised clinical practice period facility and therapist proposed by Jose Salon. Is Mr. Salon on the call?
Yes, good morning.
Great, good morning.
So Jose Angelo Salon was found substantially equivalent at the board's October 1st, 2024 meeting and was issued a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours. Mr. Salon submitted an agreement for a supervised clinical practice period facility and supervisors to be approved. The primary supervisor is Liat Avatal, and secondary supervisor is Jerome Woodbury. The facility is OCR Physical Therapy located in Phoenix. The board must now determine whether to approve the facility and primary and secondary supervisors.
Any questions or comments? I'll move to approve the supervised clinical practice facility and the physical therapist as supervising therapist.
Second.
I'm sorry, who seconded that one?
Giovanni, I both.
Oh. All right. Perfect. Thank you.
Any further discussion? I think we're ready.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Jose Angelo Salon's supervised clinical practice period facility and supervising physical therapists. Dr. Bastille?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton? I'm sorry, Mr. Barton, you're muted.
Muted, Josh.
Mr. Barton.
Sorry, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay, there we go.
That motion passes.
Great. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Next will be review consideration and possible action regarding the completed supervised clinical practice period and licensure for foreign educated physical therapist, Melissa Warren.
So at the March 26, 2024 board meeting, the board determined that Melissa Warren should complete a supervised clinical practice period. Attached to your memo for your review were both the midpoint and the final clinical performance report from that practice period. So the board must now determine whether to approve licensure or issue additional supervised clinical practice for this applicant.
Any comments or concerns?
I would move to approve for licensure. I was happy with everything I saw on there.
Second.
And I do believe Ms. Warren is on this call.
Yes, I am present.
Great. Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready.
It's been moved and seconded to accept Melissa Warren's completed supervised clinical practice period reports and approve her license application to issue her Arizona physical therapist license. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Congratulations, Ms. Warren.
Thank you very much.
And now we're on to review consideration and possible action regarding the midpoint supervised clinical practice period report for Heba Amira. Is Ms. Amira on the call?
Thank you.
Great, thank you.
And I do believe that Ms. Amira's supervising physical therapist, Dan Bonarotti, is also on the call.
Great.
So
yes, I'm here.
Thank you. At the October 29th, 2024 board meeting, the board determined that Heba Amira should complete a supervised clinical practice period. Her interim permit was issued on October 29th, 2024 and expires April 29th, 2025. Attached to your memo for a review was the midpoint clinical performance report of that supervised clinical practice period. Given the scoring of Ms. Amira's midpoint evaluation, the matter is being brought forth for the board's review pursuant to ARS 32-2025E. And I quote, at any time during an interim supervised clinical practice period, the board may revoke an interim permit because of the permit's holder incompetence or for violation of this chapter. Pursuant to Title 41, Chapter 6, Article 10, the board shall hold a hearing on request of the permit holder whose permit is revoked, end quote. And R424204E, which says in part, and I quote again, the board shall review the rating and recommendation of the on-site supervisor and decide whether to allow the interim permit holder to continue the clinical practice or recommend changes in the clinical practice to the on-site supervisor. After receiving Ms. Amira's midpoint evaluation, the board staff spoke with her supervising PT, Daniel Bonarotti, PT, MPT. An email from Mr. Bonarotti included in the board's materials for review, and in that email, Mr. Bonarotti clarified that his clinical specializes in neurophysical therapy and prosthetics, and that Ms. Amira is, quote unquote, doing well. He doesn't see an issue with her achieving competence. Board staff also spoke with Ms. Amira, who relayed that she wishes to continue with the neurophysical therapy. Both Ms. Amira and Mr. Bonarotti are attending today's meeting. The board's asked to review Ms. Amira's midpoint evaluation and supervising physical practice correspondence, supervising physical therapist correspondence to determine whether to take no action, which will have the effect of allowing Ms. Amira to continue her supervised clinical practice period or to revoke the interim permit pursuant to ARS 32-2025E.
Thank you. Ms. Amira, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions or concerns with what they've read?
Actually, I just have a few items that, in terms of looking at evaluation that are not observed and are no answers. And I'm wondering if Dr. Bonarotti's clinic is too specialized in terms of making sure that, you know, for example, we have not observed, obviously, for wound care, we're probably not doing a lot of wound care, but documentation, I think, and billing were also no answers. And so I'm just curious in terms of the no answers, is it we should benefit from a different neuro practice in terms of that review?
Would you like me to answer? There was nothing entered or no score, you mean?
No, just no answer. So I think that just winds up being perhaps you didn't observe that. So for diagnostic billing, for example.
I know she's performing, you know, coding and billing and appropriate units and things like that. I think I feel like she's gaining exposure to skills of a general clinic. She's just gaining or being challenged by the extra expertise of the clinic, but I still feel like, you know, we function as a traditional office. So I think those skills she's learning, I just didn't comment enough on the performance, but I don't see any issue there. She's certainly being exposed to that every day.
Dr. Hike, I think it's just when it says no on there, I think it's just saying that she's not at full competence for that yet. And then if it's something she hasn't had an opportunity, I've noticed that there's ones that'll say not observed.
Right. Okay. Thanks for clarification.
Yeah.
How much longer is this supervised clinical practice period?
Dr. Bastillo, it's a 6 month period. The supervised clinical practice period is typically 500 hours to be completed in 6 months. So her, this midpoint evaluation came in, if I remember correctly, shortly after the February meeting. So she has been continuing. So, I think it's just the timing of the meeting piece.
Right.
Her interim permit goes through, April 29th. And by that point, she should have earned the full 500 either on or before that time frame.
That the evaluation, the midpoint evaluation, done around 250 hours and I am at 434 hours.
Okay, thank you. So, Dr. Bonarotti, you feel like she's going to be entry level, full competence in another month? Okay.
I do. I really feel, you know, she's working very hard at an area. She didn't just pick us because of convenience or anything like that. And we talked about that at midterm in terms of this setting, and she really is interested in this setting. So I think it's appropriate for her to finish, and she's very much on track. I think the nature of the scoring, you know, with other physical therapy intern training, you know, with our students still in school, there's more of a continuum of scoring, whereas this is just a yes or a no. So
sure.
Had I put yeses for everything, then, you know, obviously what's the point of a midterm? Had there been an answer of, is she progressing appropriately? There would have been multiple, you know, they all would have been checked. So I just want to clarify that was just the scoring, you know, saying, is it 100% or not?
Right.
That was more of what I was trying. And this is my first, situation of supervising someone in this situation. So, you know, learning this scoring matrix, you know, may have been a little different, but I just want to reinforce that she's working very hard. She's done everything we've asked. She's progressing just fine. In fact, I feel like her skills in some of the specialty areas are ahead of where I thought they would be in terms of gait analysis and orthotic prescription and seeing things that that people in neurologic and prosthetic rehab need. So I see no issues, and I just wanted to support her on that. I feel like she should be able to continue.
Great. Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah. Sorry.
Any other questions?
Yeah, thank you.
Do we have a motion?
Are we just for the motion? Is it just to approve her to continue the rest of the?
Take no action.
Take
no action. No action. Okay. I would move to take no action.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion?
I think it's worth saying we appreciate both of you and we are grateful for the good work. And also Dr. Bonarotti, we're thankful for your, your desire to really, really take this seriously. So that seems very clear from this.
Thank you.
Are you ready to proceed with the vote?
Yes.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to take no action and allow Heba Amira to continue her supervised clinical practice period. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Thank you. That motion passes.
Great. Good luck, Ms. Amira. I know you'll do well.
Thank you.
Okay, we will move on to the consent agenda. And I'm going to break this up a little bit, and we're going to do the licensee applications first, which includes China Darling, Jaeger, Hosebus, and Jennifer Burdick. Are there any questions or concerns regarding their applications?
I move to approve the consent agenda for A1 and B1 and 2.
Second.
Was that Dr. Hyde did the second?
Correct.
Thank you.
Whenever you're ready, Judy.
Okay. It has been moved and seconded to approve consent agenda items 5A and 5B. Dr. Bastia?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
And then the secondary consent agenda for E and F includes Ryan Peterson, Melinda Monette, Lisa Lombard, Megan Ehrlich, Stephen Piatzik, Barbara Judd, Jean DeBar, Spencer English, Charlene Polachek, Bryant Cantrell, Sean Michaels, April Ward, and Benjamin Williams. I'd really like to commend Judy for putting together the consent agreements for every single one of these people for deficient continuing competence units for the past 2 years. She has saved us a tremendous amount of time and really deserves a huge kudos for this. I'm very grateful.
Thank you.
Any discussion? I'll move to approve the consent agenda for E and F, all of the licensees indicated.
Second.
Okay, it has been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda for items 5E and 5F. Dr. Bastia?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes. Just to interject, for those of you that are on this call with respect to any of the consent agenda items, including applications or continuing competence audits, the board will be in touch with you with next steps and will provide you documentation appropriate to the matters that were brought before the board today. So feel free to reach back out to the board if you have any questions after today's meeting.
So moving on, we have no administrative hearings, informal hearings, or rehearings. We have been asked to re-agendize the legislative update prior to other considerations so that Ms. Chepius can be present.
All right. All she needs now is her documentation in front of her. So I do apologize to the board. I absolutely mistakenly I just didn't include the memo that I had prepared, the extensive memo with respect to the legislative update. So that has been added to your packet. It's titled with late edition. If you haven't seen it yet, it's in there. So in essence, it provides some information about bills that have previously come before the board that we have discussed, as well as an update on the APTA sponsored bills and some bills that are being presented for the very first time. So without further ado, we'll just work down there, and I'm happy to try to answer any questions. This legislative process is a wily one. It it changes daily, so I'm happy to address any questions. Also, Jim Linsky is here in case there's any questions on any connection with the association. Jim, feel free with any additional information to jump in. So the first ones to discuss are the APTA AZ sponsored bills, which is HB 2181, which is for physical therapy, durable medical equipment. That bill was held in the House Health and Human Services Committee. And at this point, that basically means that bill has been defeated this session. So the next one is the House Bill 2583 for physical therapist imaging and laboratory tests. So the bill passed the Senate Health and Human Services Committee, and as of late yesterday, there is an updated, also did pass the Senate Rules Committee. So now it's onto the caucus calendars and is just basically continuing to navigate the process. There was an amendment to that one that I think we've discussed, and Jim, feel free to jump in.
Yeah, so the laboratory values is removed from that. That was the amendment. And all that this is actually a cleanup, an administrative cleanup from last year, where there's a conflict where language in one part allowed full imaging and then language in another part contradicted that. So this is just an administrative cleanup bill. We're trying just to get it through simply to match, to just clean up the language. That's the goal of this.
Okay. And then the next one is the Senate Bill 1346. This bill's passed the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and it's been referred to the House Rules Committee. At this moment, at last check, I didn't see it agendized for the Rules Committee. That's the one that allows physical therapists to prescribe is probably the wrong word, but indicate when an individual needs a disability placard for their car.
This one seems to be moving along and with bipartisan support. And there's been a call recently for constituents to reach out to their elected officials to speak in support of the bill.
So then on to additional bills, Senate Bill 1237. This is, this bill received a strike everything amendment. So these are commonly called striker bills, which basically means one bill moves partway through the process and then an amendment is made to strike everything in that bill and make it something different. And the something different can be completely different. And, so this bill is a striker, and, it was transmitted to the House on February 28th of 2025 and has passed the House Regulatory Oversight. This bill itself would prohibit full-time employees of this state from working remotely with very few exceptions. So it's an interesting bill for a lot of reasons, your staff included. And it's continuing through the process, so I don't know how that will be. There have been several steps in this state that have looked forward to the remote work possibility. There have been agencies who have given up office space. So, and this doesn't just affect the state agencies that are associated with the Capital area. This is you know, the colleges, the Board of Regent, this is everything. So it's an interesting bill. We'll see what happens. I'll keep you posted. Senate Bill 1081.
Judy, can we discuss this, Mark? Yes, you're muted, but looks like you were nodding.
Yes, thank you.
Are we one of the agencies that has given up space that would have to get more space, or?
We have not given up space yet. That was certainly on our plan. One of the deals with giving up space is the way the state works. You don't just get to give up your office space. You have to ensure that somebody else can take it over. So that's been a bit different as well. There have been some buildings that have been altered into kind of hoteling spaces, and I did hear that that was being considered for our building as well. So that's something that's a concerted effort with many, many, many agencies, not just us saying, hey, we want to, you know, downsize. So
has there been any analysis to what this would do to our staff? Meaning, would we lose anyone?
Yet to be determined. Okay. So there have been, there was a fiscal impact study somewhat associated with this bill, but the net sum result was it was too large to have numbers on by the time that they needed them. So, you know, this could be additional space. This could be, a vast change in employment status. This is one of the things that ADOA does. The Department of Administration does a survey annually on state employees. And there was something, I forget the exact percentage, but it was higher than 95% of state employees found the opportunity to work remotely to be a benefit, an enjoyable benefit. So we'll see. So any other questions about that one? Okay, so the next one is Senate Bill 1081. This one is another striker. It started as an obstetrics gynecology service in rural communities and has now a striker amendment that hasn't necessarily been adopted yet, but the amendment would require health boards to refer complaints wherein a health professional may have committed a misdemeanor or felony offense to the appropriate law enforcement agency within 2 business days. It allows for the board to summarily suspend the licensee pending action by that law enforcement agency. The law enforcement agency would be required to provide the board information regarding their outcome of the investigation. And if the case is not referred for prosecution or charges not filed, the board may further investigate for unprofessional conduct. It would restrict a health professional's ability to file an anonymous complaint, and it would administratively close complaints after 1 year if the board does not take final actions in cases, and I quote, unrelated to protecting the public health and safety. It also requires the Attorney General to investigate any action taken by a health board that one or more member of the legislature allege violates the law and rules or constitution. So this bill is a mixed bag of a lot. And we were asked for a statement regarding it. And basically I said that the board would not be meeting until today. And that as a director, I found a lot of concern with timelines and mandates because starting with the first one, it puts board staff who is not qualified to identify if something is actually a felony or misdemeanor in charge of determining whether it's a felony or misdemeanor and then reporting it within 2 days. Well, staff would bring that to the board for the board to adjudicate, but at the same point, the board doesn't meet every 2 days. So I don't know how that is sustainable. It also indicates that the board could summarily suspend pending action by the law enforcement, but that then might conflict with current due process procedures with respect to summary suspension of a license. So, again, I don't know how that's achievable or sustainable. The time limit on complaints for 1 year, I don't know what complaints that the board brings forward that does not impact public health and safety, because that's the board's purpose. So, but a time limit on a complaint is always something to be concerned about with respect to each complaint has its own merits and has to be treated accordingly. It also places the legislature, any one member of the legislature could be reviewing any and all board actions for all boards. So, and then attempt to have the Attorney General's office oversee that. So the timelines, the interwoven conflicts, I see to be a problem in this sense. So at this point, this was held in the House Health and Human Services Committee. And so I don't know that it's actually proceeding any further. I've not gotten any more requests, but I did indicate in my email that if the board had any input on this, I would provide that information. So if you want to direct me to respond in any way, feel free to do so.
Judy, can you tell us about the anonymous complaint? I thought healthcare professionals could anonymously complain about individual or practice and not have to sign that. Isn't that a new item?
Yeah, that is a new item. So and anonymous complaints, and I may have Mr. Harris kind of jump in on this one a little bit to help clarify. But with anonymous complaints, if the board receives an anonymous complaint, and Mindy might have some input here too, Mindy or Liz, if the board receives an anonymous complaint, if there's merit to the complaint, it's looked at, it's at least tried to determine. If there's additional information that's needed and somebody has provided us either fake contact information, there's very little to go on and there's little to continue with. We don't categorically not accept anonymous complaints, but there is a point in the process and the due process that the respondent in any complaint has the right to confront their accusers. Mr. Harris, am I using that properly? Basically know what is complained about them and who complained. So at some point they do have to know, but to again categorically say that an anonymous complaint can only be submitted, can't be submitted by somebody who is a professional unless, they've checked this box, and this box. Again, that becomes an administrative issue to determine. How do we determine that? How do we know that? So, Mr. Harris, anything to add there?
No, Judy, members of the board, I thought you just did a very nice job of presenting sometimes the challenges of investigating anonymous complaints, but yet not giving the individual the opportunity to submit an anonymous complaint may have the chilling effect of bringing something very serious to a, professional licensing board. So, as Judy, indicated, there's generally two types of anonymous complaints. One is that's truly anonymous. And as she mentioned, those are really sometimes difficult to investigate. And Mindy and Liz can jump in as well. The more common type of anonymous complaint we receive, though, is somebody asking if they can remain anonymous during the course of the investigation.
Right.
And as Judy mentioned, I think, Judy, Mindy, Liz, they do their very best to protect that individual's privacy rights. However, generally speaking, in almost every case, at some point, the licensee is going to have to know who filed the complaint in order to meaningfully participate in the investigative process. And that is fully explained, though, to the complainant, you know, before their identity is shared. I think that's it, Judy.
Okay. always a bonus when Mr. Harris can weigh in on something. Okay, so any other thoughts on that one? Any other questions? Like I said, last I saw, this was held. So it may be held for good. It may be something that comes forward again.
And would you want a comment then from the board on this, or?
Well, it's up to the board to determine. Frankly, if you didn't say anything, I would indicate that it was discussed and the board had questions about certain components of it. And then we would kind of leave it at that.
It just seems like the 2 days aspect in terms of a response seems, unrealistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed. Okay, so then the next one was House Bill 2927. So this bill was transmitted. This is public meetings, records, requirements, and penalties. So this bill was transmitted to the Senate on March 12, 2025. It's been referred to the Senate Government Committee and was agendized for the 3:20 meeting. I don't believe. Yeah, I don't have any record as of the last couple of days that it's actually been heard by the government or the Rules Committee. So it was attached for your review, and there was also an email. The board was questioned by the Governor's Office for Strategic Planning and Budgeting, OSPB. That's the office that that approves any kind of budgeting that the board does towards the end of the fiscal year for the next fiscal years. So. This bill would require the public bodies meet through technological devices to provide access to the public both through the technological device and at a physical location. So I did highlight that section. The bill has a variety of meat to it, but this was the piece that was interesting for the board. So, among other changes, it would require that the Attorney General to respond to a complaint within 120 days and make that response publicly available, as well as court review parameters regarding the denial of access to public records. So, in essence, the biggest portion of this is that if this were to pass and be enacted, the board would have to set up, even with our virtual meetings, we would have to set up and staff a meeting room somewhere and advertise that. So we would have to prepare that for every meeting. The board hasn't gotten, we've been meeting virtually for quite a while now. The board has not gotten any kind of inquiries or complaints or questions, because if we did, we would do something about it. But there has not been anybody who has been knocking at our door to say, hey, we want to be in person. So the OSPB always has, when they have a question, it's always fiscally related. So I did provide the information, and I provided the email to you that was sent to them with respect to analyzing, you know, I don't know what this turns into, whether it turns into board members who would want to be there, who could be there, whatever it would, you know, incur then travel expenses. And I based it on travel from Flagstaff, since that's the furthest that we have at this point. So there would be the fiscal impact of that. There would be the staff burden of taking on the responsibility before every meeting to prepare and advertise a room, plus the idea of, you know, suddenly then you would have all sorts of boards, again, for all sorts of meetings, scrambling to find space. So we would have a couple of options to us. There are, of course, the board meeting rooms in the 1740 building. There's also the 1400 building. That's the hoteling space that we could do that. If none of those rooms were available, depending upon the size we would be forced to have, I don't know how many rooms there would be available. But it would take time. Just another task to take time for very little, success as far as I can. If the past is a predictor of the future, I just don't see that anybody would be joining. Any questions about that one? Okay. And then the next one, and this one the board was asked to have a response to. So Senate Bill 1235, this is one that I brought forward before. This is about the Health Professional Regulatory Board and memberships. And if you recall, the Senator Shamp, who's the sponsor of this bill, did hold a stakeholder meeting that I did attend. So with respect to that stakeholder meeting, or I guess as a result of that stakeholder meeting, they revamped this bill pretty dramatically. So I again highlighted in your packet the information particular to the board. So the language was added regarding public member vacancies and Senate confirmation of an appointed board member. It changed existing membership requirements, including specifying that two of the four members are members who are retired from practice or who are not currently practicing. It also establishes a regulatory oversight committee made up of three appointed health board executive directors tasked with approving or denying market sensitive actions or decisions made by other health boards and set timelines. So market sensitive actions included modifying an exam passing scores, adopting or modifying advertising restrictions, changing fees or civil penalties, expanding or restricting the scope of practice, demonstrating a pattern of disciplinary or discriminatory actions that create barriers to the market participation. The bill also includes an extensive report by the health boards to be submitted before November 1st of this year, with the intent to, quote, facilitate the revision and consolidation of statutes governing each health board in an effort to create uniformity and consistency in application while allowing for necessary exceptions essential to the operations of the regulatory authority of each board. The amended bill was submitted in the House and referred originally to the House Health and Human Services Committee and the House Rules Committee. It's since been withdrawn from the Health and Human Services Committee and further referred to the House Commerce Committee. I don't know why they switched, but they did. So in essence, the sponsor of the bill has asked the boards and has emailed the boards that were present at that stakeholder meeting to register a neutral position on this. At this point, as of late yesterday, I did not see evidence that any boards had actually done that. So it's up to you to determine whether you want to direct me to register a neutral position on this bill now. The association, through their lobbyist, Tom Dorn, and his office registered an against position. This was the bill, if you remember correctly, that originally wanted to change to four public members and reduce professional membership accordingly. So there have been some changes. This is, in my opinion, better than it originally was, because frankly, at this point, our board meets all of those requirements as it is currently staffed. It does put in language that allows, as we experienced with Dr. Hike, that if a confirmation is not made, then it's automatic, rather than losing those board members, which is a big portion. But unbeknownst to me prior to this, not every board was required to have Senate confirmation of their members. We are. I don't know what the distinction is, but this bill makes that a requirement of all agencies. So where other agencies are going to fall in that thought process. I don't really know. The idea of the vastness of the report that they're requiring is that's a considerable undertaking to be able to pinpoint and explain all of that information that they're requesting, as well as the idea of providing it with the intention of consolidating is a bit of a arbitrary term. And the board has faced, you know, consolidation efforts on numerous occasions, but so that I wanted to bring that forward because, like I said, it has dramatically changed. And then to request that you decide if you want to register a neutral opinion or if you want to not take that action, that's up to your discretion and presenting it for your review.
Well, it does seem better than the previous one, but there's still some concerns. I feel like it's hard to be neutral 100% for sure.
Yeah, I can't say that I would feel comfortable going with a neutral position on it. I just think there's still too many things in there that I don't agree with.
Judy, do we have any idea about what they mean by an extensive report? I mean,
yeah, it's highlighted in there. Let me find it. This is, which one is this?
Create uniformity and consistency in application.
1235. So I'm going to draw your attention, Dr. Hike, to the actual bill itself.
Okay.
And in that packet of information, let me see if I can find it. I should just look through the pink. Yes, here it is. If you're looking at the packet 12B1 legislative update packet, it's on it's towards the bottom of the bill. It's on page 49 of that PDF document. I shall provide a copy outlining the laws, rules, and internal processes that dictate the following. All requirements for each type of license or certificate issued by the board, including education and training, continuing education requirements, initial and renewal licensure certification application and process timeframes, application and initial and renewal licensing and certification fees, required background checks and any offenses that would preclude licensure, how the board receives and investigates complaints of all disciplinary actions, including appeal processes, number of full-time employees and their corresponding duties, hiring, onboarding, termination of employees or the board, description of documents and discipline records retention, description of current contracts with third-party vendors, description of board positions, including qualifications, term length, and prohibitions. So virtually that's a description of everything that we do.
And in terms of what you already provide for report to the state, is that that's like 10 times more work.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we can adopt a neutral position on this based off that and based off of, you know, other concerns.
Okay. All right. Well, then in the, unless there's any further discussion on that, the remainder of that memo just identifies the most recent movement of any bills that were brought forward. So I don't think there's anything that we need to really do about that. I just wanted to update you on 1037 keeps moving, 2049, all of these keep moving, basically. Are there any questions about any of the rest of it?
And then in terms of the last one, 1656, and the idea of the massage board potentially entering into the physical therapy board, is that kind of been, looks like that's still being considered as well?
Mm-hmm. It is. They're all still moving. There haven't been any like huge amendment changes or anything like that. They're all still moving. So, at this point, in the memo, at the top of the memo, I included some dates that are still in place. So the last day for consideration in the second body is March 28th. So as you all know, that's coming quickly. So I would like to say that that's, you know, a clear-cut deadline, but based on the fact that many bills after the deadline date of being heard in the first body, so House bills in the House committees, Senate bills in the Senate committees, that still progressed even after the deadline. So there's ways around these deadlines. I don't know them all, and I couldn't describe them to you, but it happens. We're seeing it happen. So there is a deadline coming up, so I would like to think that, you know, there is potential that some of these bills just won't be moving fast enough to get where they need to, but it's rare that we would see a signee die in April as well. So they've gone lately until June. So I don't know the political movement of a lot of this stuff, but what I'll do is I'll keep tracking it and I'll keep bringing it to you. So.
Yeah, if we can find out more about why 1235 moved to the Commerce Committee, that would be interesting. And I don't know if that's anywhere at all related to 1656.
Yeah. I don't know that, you know, there have been several notes about why would this move? I don't know. So the presider in any committee has the ability to determine what actually gets on their agenda and what doesn't. So that could have an impact as well.
A question for Jim is, has the Dorn group looked at that massage board bill consolidation, and are they doing anything?
My understanding is that the APKZ asked them to oppose that as well. I will follow up, and that's the 1656 is the massage.
Mm-hmm.
So I will, my understanding is that APTA is opposing it through the Dorn group, and I will follow up.
Okay. Thank you.
Jim, there were dueling bills. There was a House bill and there's a Senate bill. Right. The House bill seems to have stagnated. The Senate bill seems to be moving. So that's Senate Bill 1656.
Senate mm-hmm. Bill 1656. I will, you know.
Yeah, 1656.
1656.
Mm-hmm.
We will. Just like we opposed Senate Bill 1237, we'll oppose 1656.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a lot of bills to track.
Yeah. Well,
that's only.
It's been busy. Yeah.
That's only a small portion of the ones I'm actually watching. But we'll see.
Seems crazy.
Learning a lot, that's for sure.
No doubt.
So, okay. Well, those were the legislative updates. So.
Well, great. Thank you very much, Judy. That's really helpful. Okay, so we will return to the regular agenda then for number 9, complaints and other disciplinary matters, review, consideration, and action. And we have A, case 2424, James Beasley, PT.
Good morning, members of the board. I believe that Dr. Beasley is present, as well as the complainant DN. Dr. Beasley, are you present?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Good morning. Yes, good morning. We can hear you. And is the patient DN present? Okay. As far as the case briefing, this case was opened after review of the complaint received from patient DN and then a subsequent review of the patient's physical therapy medical record. DN alleged that Dr. Beasley did not provide an individualized treatment plan of care that was based on the patient's input. The medical record revealed potential deficiencies in the clinical assessment, documentation, and billing that potentially did not support the services for this patient. DN was advised that the billing dispute that he had included as part of this complaint was not within the jurisdiction of this board and therefore would not be addressed as part of this review. Dr. Beasley received a draft copy of the investigative report and provided a supplemental written response, which was included in your review materials as Exhibit 6. Board staff identified the following possible statute violations that may apply. ARS 32-2044, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist due to a deliberate or negligent act or failure to act, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. And ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records, as it relates to R-424-304 adequate patient records, number 6, for each date of service, there is an accurate record of the physical therapy services provided and billed. This case is for your review.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Yeah. Dr. Beasley, are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes, I am.
Great. Thank you. So, if anyone have any questions to begin with?
Yes, I do. In terms of your evaluation, I'm wondering about what were you thinking in terms of your evaluation and what items that you think you should include in your evaluation with a patient with low back pain.
I was aware that he would maybe not come to a follow-up. I knew at the time that he was having some issues with his insurance, and for that reason, I didn't want to do a lot of provocative testing. When I began the evaluation, I started with lumbar range of motion, which reproduced some of the sharp pain that he reported during his subjective exam. Repeated flexion extension showed that he had sciatica that was reproduced with flexion and reduced with extension. That same sciatica was reproduced with palpation of his piriformis muscle. Going off of that information, I decided to treat that pain that I found. So I did some soft tissue mobilization, and I treated him with repeated extension and stretching and exercises for the piriformis muscle. I didn't conduct further testing because I didn't know when his next follow-up would be. And I didn't want to cause further pain or injury when I wouldn't have another follow-up to treat those symptoms.
And you believe reflexes and dermatomes and myotomes are something that is too irritating then?
No. I did not conduct that portion of the exam, which I would have done at my follow-up to assess what nerve root might be contributing to the sciatica, but that was not something that I performed at that evaluation.
And it seems like I believe you've attended some continuing education coursework specifically for low back pain through, I think, is it Chad Cook's?
Yes, I have. Education. Just like online courses.
Okay. And did you learn something from that?
I learned a lot. What I took away from that is he was very in favor of functional testing. So he's more in favor of cardiovascular endurance, muscular endurance. He didn't really talk about a lot of the special tests that I was used to that we learned in school. He didn't talk about a lot of, like he did discuss slump tests, straight leg raise, all that sort of stuff, but he didn't go into a lot of the other clinical tests, like some of the clinical prediction rules as far as thrust or non-thrust, lumbar stabilization, which kind of surprised me, but that did kind of inform why I maybe didn't do more differential diagnostic testing, just because he didn't really emphasize that as much in the course that I took.
And the prone instability test, would that be something that you'd want to do in someone that's an older adult?
And depending on their physical condition, I don't see any reason why not to do it.
Can you describe how you did that test?
So I have him lay prone over a table with his legs off the edge. I apply a PDA mobilization force through his lumbar spine, see if the pain is reproduced. And then if it is, I would have them go into a spinal extension, so raise their legs up, apply the same force and see if that reduces the pain.
Yeah, that's the test. It's fairly aggressive. I mean, many younger people actually cannot perform it.
And I didn't say anything in terms of central PAs or unilateral PAs, which, you know, can be done. Grade one and grade twos are not very aggressive. I would think you'd want to do that first in this patient. And the patient in your evaluation was reported, it says, he describes it as a constant dull and numb, but progresses to a sharp stabbing pain. So dull and numb kind of sounds like you'd want to check dermatomes and reflexes. Would you have done it differently now that you've gone through the course and you bring that up to light?
Well, I took the course before this evaluation, but of course, after going through this whole process, I would do things quite differently, yes.
And then you also mentioned in the first go round of peer performance syndrome, and that your clinic sees a lot, is what you said in your statement, of people with peer performance syndrome. Are you aware of the prevalence of that condition?
Yes, I apologize for that. What I had meant to say, I was nervous at that time, but what I meant to say is that I find it common that in cases of low back pain with sciatica, that palpation of piriformis commonly reproduces that pain. But I am aware that prevalence of sciatica or piriformis syndrome is low. I was looking it up last night, around 0.3 to 6% of cases of low back pain with sciatica.
Yeah, so I mean there's the potential for it, but yeah, in terms of looking at that and that statement. Okay. Thank you.
My secondary concern with the evaluation is lack of evaluation of the hip, which can reproduce, familiar pain, that this patient was describing. Can you talk about why that was excluded?
I did not do that again because I found pain was reproduced with lumbar flexion. So in my thought process, I was like, I might find may find guarding if I went through hip range of motion testing. It may reproduce as pain. So I elected to delay that evaluation until a later time.
Again, it can help aid your differential diagnosis, for sure, because your home exercise program included a lot of hip components that were not evaluated.
And those components I felt were related to his piriformis muscle. I did those with him on the day. He didn't report any increase in pain with those exercises, so I continued, but I also included some lumbar extension, repeated extensions to help with centralization of the pain.
So the purpose of the clamshell exercises and reverse clamshell?
Just to help mobilize any spasms within the piriformis musculature.
Any other questions?
This
Do you have any comments or statements? Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, I guess the only question I have, because I've heard a couple of times that he was wanting to just postpone certain testing until the next visit. I'm just curious as to why that is. I'm looking at the time spent for each intervention here. It shows he spent 20 minutes doing the evaluation. If there was still more that would have benefited the patient to, you know, look at and evaluate, why not spend a little bit of additional time getting those additional tests? Is there a reason that that was deferred until a future visit?
Yes. I just didn't know how much at the time. I didn't know how much more clinical benefit I would get, because I'd found like peripheralization with flexion, centralization with extension. So I figured that likely there was some sort of discogenic involvement into his pain. So I figured further testing, like straight leg raise, lump testing, would probably confirm that again, but it would also cause further irritation of that pain. I also found that, again, his pain was reproduced with palpation of his piriformis. So, you know, my mindset was, let me treat that first. I didn't think that would further aggravate his pain in the time before he was able to start coming for regular follow-ups. And I could continue doing that further differential diagnostic testing at that time.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
So going through this process, Dr. Beasley, have you learned anything more about documentation?
Yeah, I've learned a lot more. Specify why I don't do certain things and just clarify if I'm going to delay testing, that I have good reason for it within the note, and then just ensure that it will be done in a timely follow-up.
Has it changed your practice in either your performance of an evaluation or documentation of your interventions?
Yes. I mean, now that I'm aware, I didn't know that this was a problem to begin with. So I've tried to change things and take into account Mindy's investigative report just so I don't have this issue again. And to help benefit the patients, obviously, but
okay. Any further questions? Is there a comment or closing statement you'd like to make?
Not at this time, no.
Okay, thank you. Well, I feel some additional continuing education would be very beneficial for Dr. Beasley, both in the areas of orthopedic assessment and treatment of the lumbar spine, as well as documentation. I think it can be done as a non-disciplinary order. And I'd like to get your feelings on that, Dr. Hike and Mr. Leone.
I'd be in agreement on that. I mean, just looking over or hearing Mr. Beasley's statement and rationale for everything that he did within the evaluation, and then also looking at what the patient's initial complaint was. I don't necessarily see anything even missing out on certain things within the evaluation that put the patient in any harm necessarily. But I definitely think that he needs to do a better job of kind of backing what his mindset is, which I think would be beneficial taking a con ed course on documentation.
Agreed. I think the evaluation for the lumbar spine needs to continue. I think I saw something about considering a course such as, I think, the long-term manual therapy course, but I didn't see that as I was trying to scan through. I think he needs...
Could I clarify that for you, Dr. Hike?
Sure.
Yeah, I'll be starting a CONT program through Optum and starting in May.
Okay. Which I think Karen is several months to include all of the spine, as you know. I think that would go a long ways. But the documentation piece, for example, I think needs to be reinforced as well. But I agree with you in terms of a non-disciplinary approach.
Okay. I know that the long-term manual therapy course would be an excellent course. I would, agree that this could be an approved course, if we can ensure enrollment, because it does take a long time to complete. So it won't be the short period that we usually, give to people to complete their other coursework. But I do think it would be a phenomenal course. And it would check a lot of boxes for sure. And then to add a documentation piece.
Exactly. I think the severity of the patient in the initial evaluation was a 2 out of 10. On initial evaluation, but it could go up to a 10. So the irritation part, in terms of trying to not irritate anything, doesn't really fit for this patient. So I think that that course will do a nice job of kind of reinforcing that idea.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to move that we, offer Dr. Beasley a non-disciplinary order for continuing education in the area of orthopedic assessment and intervention of the lumbar spine for a minimum of 8 hours, and documentation for a minimum of 4 hours.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Just for clarification, Dr. Bastillo, what kind of time frame would you like to see that completed in?
I'd like to see the documentation completed within 3 months. If he chooses to use the long-term manual therapy course, that could be 12 to 18 months long. And so I would like to give him that opportunity to complete that course, and that would be okay with me if he submits that for approval.
So then in essence, we would say that this shall be completed in 18 months. That gives him the opportunity, because otherwise, if I understand properly, it would be bringing it back to the board after he determines which course he wants to take.
Right.
Okay. Any further discussion, or are you ready for the vote?
I think we're ready.
Okay. So in case 2424 James Beasley, it's been PT, it's been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order to continue to include continuing education, which shall be completed in 18 months, that time frame allowed in case Mr. Beasley seeks the long-term manual therapy course, which the board has discussed and recommends. Courses must be pre-approved, may be completed online, and do not count towards renewal requirements. Continuing education shall be completed in the area of orthopedic assessment and intervention of the lumbar spine for a minimum of 8 hours and documentation for a minimum of 4 hours. Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
You're muted, Dr. Hike.
I didn't hear you.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Good luck to you, Mr. Beasley.
Thank you.
Dr. Bastillo, it is now 9:51. As my imminent departure is coming, I'm thinking, what if we stop the recording and I allow somebody else to do it? It's up to you if you want to take a break at this time or if you want to just continue on. But I'll stop.
Let's go ahead and take a short break and reconvene at 10 o'clock. And then.
Okay.
Perfect. Sounds good.
So the recording will stop at 9:52, and the board is in recess until 10 o'clock. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy the rest of the meeting.